Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Solana's got his Dolphins hat on. I like it.
It's one of those hats you get from Publix.
I got it at the game, but okay. Fins up, pop, pop.
Looks like a freebie.
That's a freebie there, bro. Come on. It came with a loaf of bread.
But it looks good on you. Dono and Frito will be at Twin Peaks in Davie tomorrow after Dolphins training camp. They'll be there from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. Twin Peaks, your ultimate sports lodge. Come in for lunch. Get free chips and queso with your training camp ticket from that day. That is Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, and scenic views. Kimbo Camper is on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. He is a friend of ours, friend of the program, a legendary Miami Dolphin, and I do want to talk some Dolphins with him, but obviously today the passing of Nick Monacani is on every Dolphins fan's mind. We talked with Nat Moore earlier. This is the statement from the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Nick Monacani was a true hero of the game. His inspiring Hall of Fame journey that started as a 13th round draft choice and leading the Dolphins' no-name defense is one filled with grit, determination, courage, and passion. Nick's contributions off the field were even greater than what he did on it. He lived a life of honor and nobility, and his legacy will live forever through his bronze bust in Canton, Ohio. And Kimbo Camper is on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Hello, Bo.
How you guys doing today?
Very good. So what can you say? I mean, Dolphins fans, obviously, we all know Nick Bonacani's play on the field. And then I was even saying to Nat, like, you know, sports fans, we watched him as a broadcaster on Inside the NFL, and he had when his son was injured, he became such a leader in the world of spinal cord research, very long career being on the forefront of that with the Bonacani Fund. But what can you say about Nick Bonacani, who passed away at the age of 78?
Well, first of all, I think he was a consummate gentleman. Always, everything that he did it with a lot of class, lived his life with dignity. And really was a special person. I first met Nick, when I was drafted in 1976, Nick retired shortly before that. And then I came in and I blew my knee out, and another linebacker came in and blew his knee out. And so they brought Nick back out of retirement. And so I was around Nick for a year and had an opportunity to just kind of get to know who he was and what he was all about. He was like, on the football field, he was a guy that was just committed to doing everything the right way. You look at that 17-0 team, and everyone talks about Zonk and Kick and Warfield and Bob Greasy. But I think when you look at that team in its entirety, that no-name defense was maybe more important than the offense for the success that team had. And he was the coach on the field. I mean, I remember being in meetings with him, and Bill Arnsberger would be up there putting in a defense or talking, and Nick would chime in, and it felt like you had two coaches in that meeting room. But I remember when I first saw him, he was about 5'10", 5'11", always had his legs crossed when he wasn't he was waiting for the play to come on. I kept his hand on his hip, and I thought, man, how can this guy be so good? But he was. He was good at everything he did, and as a Hall of Famer, but. I think the quote from the Hall of Fame is true. It's not very often you can say that, this guy was a Hall of Fame football player, but that was eclipsed by what he did off the field and after his career was over. He was studying for his law degree while he was with the Dolphins, ended up getting his law degree. He ended up becoming the president of U.S. Tobacco for a long time, a multi multi-million dollar company that he ran and ran well. And then his son Mark gets injured in a playing for the Citadel gets injured in a game and severs a spinal cord. And Nick committed to him at that time and said, I'm going to do everything I can to get you back on your feet. And he did it in a monstrous way. I mean, the Miami Project to cure paralysis is a remarkable factory down there, what they do, the research that they do, the efforts that they get to people to get to people back up on their feet is nothing short of remarkable. And he's been the guy that spearheaded it, raising millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to keep that thing going. And to me, you know, whenever I think of Nick, that's what I think of. I think of his legacy with the Miami Project, all the work that he did for it. And he used to do a big event up at the Waldorf Astoria in New York every year. And every major star from the world of sports showed up to support it. And so it tells you a little bit about what he meant to everybody around the world of sports. So, you know, we really lost a hero today, a guy that was just dedicated to everything that he did it all, you know, as best as anybody possibly could. And, there's a lot of names you throw around with the Dolphins with obviously with Dan Marino and Zonk and those guys. But, the last guy that seems to get mentioned is Nick. And, you know, I think there's a, at least in my mind, I'd like to see him kind of be a guy that's talked about a little bit more in the hierarchy of guys that have played for the Dolphins and what they've meant to the South Florida community.
And, Ken, when people ask me about, like, philanthropy and, you know, even my post-career success, I bring up you. Yeah. I bring up Joe Rose. I bring up JT. I bring up O.J. McDuffie, just guys that were down here giving back. You know, football's gone, but, you know, I'm going to move forward. Was Nick one of those guys that you looked at, you're coming in when he's leaving, but you see all he's doing and know, like, it, after football's gone, that's not the end of everything. I watched Nick do this before I was even in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was around a group of guys when I first came here, Nick certainly being one of them, that you'd get on the plane and you know, Nick would pop out his, you know, break out his law books and start studying his law books. And Eddie Newman did the same thing. You know, I remember Jim Mandich, you know, every time I'd sit down by him, he'd have, you know, business books out. Dick Anderson became a state senator. You know, the quality and the class of the guys that were on that football team certainly influenced me when I came here. It's not what I expected a professional football team to be. You know, it was they were very businesslike and they were dedicated not only to the game but improving their lives after the game. So there's no question between Nick and those other guys I mentioned. It made it easy for me when I got done playing football, and rather than sitting around and moping over the fact that, you know, my football career is over, my thoughts immediately went to, okay, what am I going to do now? What's going to be the next chapter? What am I going to do to differentiate myself from other people? And I think my thought process about that came from those guys in the culture that was built down here in the 60s and 70s, when they drafted all these guys.
Ken Bocamper is with us, and again today Nick Bonacani passed away at the age of 78, and he really was a legendary Miami Dolphin, and really just a legendary South Florida sports figure, and beloved by many, and we appreciate Kim coming on to talk with him. And I think Nick would be angry if we didn't talk a little football, right? Can we segue into football?
Well, look, you know what? It was certainly one thing. He was a Dolphin fan along the lines. And look, it's kind of oil and water, but, you know, Nick started his career with the Boston Patriots.
Yep.
You know, so he's got a history with that New England franchise up there, and I think he's just proud of that and his ties to Notre Dame, where he played college football. But I think if you went right to the heart of it and asked him, he would say that his blood turns aqua and orange. I think that's the way he looked at it.
Well, speaking of the aqua and orange, I think Brian Flores made a little bit of news yesterday, although I think everyone in the media has been in agreement that Ryan Fitzpatrick has looked better than Josh Rosen, but Brian Flores came out and said it yesterday. But that's not surprising, right? Ryan Fitzpatrick should look more composed right now, yes?
I would think so. And I think, you know, I was there when you know, then when he was asked the question, and, you know, and then he didn't send it out like some big statement. It was just, you know, well, where do you see it? And he says, well, right now, you know, Ryan's playing the best football right now. So, or however he, you know, I'm kind of paraphrasing there, but basically along that line. So it wasn't a big thing. And then all of a sudden, it seems like every time I turn around, you know, Flores says Ryan's the guy, you know. I don't think it was that ring. I don't think it came out as that much of a ringing endorsement if you were there. But, you know, it tends to blow up when it gets talked about. But, yeah, I think, look, I think, as you know, first of all, Ryan Fitzpatrick, 15 years in the league. He's got experience with numerous offensive coordinators, many different offensive schemes. He's been successful. He's had kind of that roller coaster guy. One week he'll come out and he'll throw for, you know, 435 yards and three touchdowns. And next week he may have come out and throw for a buck and a quarter and three interceptions. So, you know, that's kind of what his career path has been. But so he should be ahead of a guy, Josh Rosen, who is in his second year in the league and going in through another offensive coordinator for the first time with him, another franchise. But the other thing too is, you know, Ryan has been here, you know, probably got a 2 month head start on Josh Rosen, understanding everything. So I think time will tell if he's going to keep that spot. And I think more importantly, time's going to tell whether he wins that spot or not in the competition, whether or not he's the guy that starts the majority of the games early in the season. To me, that's another question that goes along with that. What's the right thing to do? Play the guy that beats that's winning the battle there, or play the guy that you've got to find out if indeed he's going to be our franchise guy, or more importantly, make sure that you know that he's not going to be the guy, so you can make the right decision next year when this crop of quarterbacks is all getting ready to hit the league.
And another story, Kim, that's coming out, you know, throughout camp, that there are different guys are playing positions that we're not used to watching them. Rashad Jones is at linebacker early on. Minkah Fitzpatrick was in the nickel and at boundary corner and back at safety. Bobby McCain, who was we all know as the nickel, he was playing safety. Is that crazy to do that, or is it genius to let the guys understand what everybody's doing on the field so that they can play their position better?
I think it's twofold there, Channing. I think one, obviously, is you like, especially in that secondary, you know, that you know, used to be the old days, you know, you had your two safeties and your two corners. Now first down, you know, they may empty the backfield and go five wide. Now all of a sudden you've got six defensive backs on the field. So, you know, it pays to have everybody know all those other positions. But I think just like linebacker, you know, I think they're doing the same thing at linebacker. I think they're doing the same thing in the defensive line. Wide receiver, tight ends, they're looking for guys and putting them in position a lot of time to see what they can do, what their skill set is, and how they can take advantage of that skill set. And I believe, you know, that's kind of what I grew up with as a defensive coordinator when I played with the Miami Dolphins, a guy that took his players and then took advantage of their skills to enhance his defense. And I think that's what they're looking for. And I think it just, you know, it stands to reason with the way that New England has played over the years, that these coaches have all been up there, that they're going to come down and try to do those things that have been successful. And I like the idea. You know, I've seen Charles Harris standing up in a two-man, you know, in the outside linebacker position when they line up in a 3-4. You've seen, you know, the kid Van Ginkel was running with the starters at outside linebacker yesterday for a little bit. So they're trying a lot of guys at a lot of different spots, and I think they're trying to acclimate themselves to how they play in the scheme and what they can do that they can use to enhance the scheme. So I don't think this depth chart really is going to be of any use until really probably week three and maybe just not until you go into the regular season, because I think during the preseason games you're going to see a lot of guys in a lot of different places so they can find out exactly what they can do.
Kim Bocamper is with us. We were floored on Monday when the Dolphins sent out the press release that Pat Flaherty was being relieved of his duties as offensive line coach, only because you just don't see that. Like, you so rarely see a coach get fired so early on in a season and early on in his tenure and whatnot. When you heard the news and now that you've digested it, because Crowder and I were kind of digesting it as it happened, and I said you could paint it as, oh my goodness, it's a disaster over there, or you could paint it as, here's a leader like Brian Flores who says, yeah, I'm not just going to ride with someone that I don't think fits what I'm trying to do, and I'm going to cut this off at the pass before it becomes detrimental to the team. So when you got the news and now that you've digested it, how do you paint that?
I was a little surprised. You know, I had talked to Pat a little bit early when he first came in, and but I also talked to Googs when, because I've known Googs for a long time, the new offensive line coach. And we, you know, when they brought him in, as a consultant. He said, you know, he really wants to be an offensive line coach, but he's going to do whatever it needs. And I think his relationship with Brian Flores from the time they were in New England together probably influenced that decision. And I'm like, look, I was up with the media watching practice yesterday, and just listening to, you know, the opinions, and you know, you got a coach like Brian Flores in a situation where he's at as a first-time head coach. The Dolphins, you know, had their struggles over the last two decades. Everyone's looking for change. Yet here's a guy that, you know, by his own admission said it was a very, very difficult choice for him to make, but he felt like for the betterment of the team, he had to make that move. So you're sitting up in the press room with all these guys as well. Well, you know, one guy says, well, you know, it's pretty, you know, it says a lot that he's able to early on to go ahead and make a move like that he feels is the right thing to do for the team. And then the next person spouts him and says, yeah, but he's the guy that hired that guy to begin with. So, you know, he's kind of in a no-win situation making a move like this. But look, he's the head coach. He's going to sink or swim based on the decision that he makes over the next, hopefully, 5 years with this franchise. And some are going to be good, some are going to be bad, but you know, I'd rather see a guy that follows his beliefs and what the right thing to do is, even if you have to face the scrutiny of the people that are writing about you, talking about you on the radio, all these things. You know, if you believe it, do it. And I know Googs is a good offensive line coach. I know he's highly respected. So is Pat Flaherty, but you know, right place, right time, and they made the move. So, you know, I guess, especially this year more so than any for me, I'm really kind of in this wait-and-see mode. I'm not going to make any snap decisions on anybody and, you know, criticize a guy for doing something like that. Let's see how the pattern goes as we move along through the season. But we're what, five practices in now?
That's it, yep.
And all of a sudden, we know who's the starting quarterback. The coach is already doing stupid things. We got fired an offensive line coach. You know, you would think the Titanic's just about to hit the iceberg down here and the season hasn't even got close yet.
That is the news cycle nowadays, man. You don't have time to do it. Everybody wants to opine, and then nobody has any hesitation to change their opinion the next day, and there's no consequence.
Yeah,
I've
never opened up a newspaper. I've never opened up that newspaper and saw a headline. My bad.
We can't do that.
Kim Bocamper, he is a very successful restaurateur, and Monday was National Chicken Wing Day. And you being a successful restaurateur and probably a guy that could throw back a few wings in his day.
We gave him some love now talking about wings.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We were talking about Bocamper's being one of the hot spots for wings down here. And I know you've got the new place on Las Olas. But as a professional restaurateur and a guy who could throw back some wings, are boneless wings really wings?
No. Let me give you the story of boneless wings. Right, chicken wings have become a commodity. They rise and fall. Prices rise and fall depending on demand. Prices always go up at the beginning of the football season, and they're at their peak come Super Bowl because everybody during the football season and everybody in the Super Bowl is selling wings. And so, you know, a lot of places, you know, to offset the cost of the wings, they kind of go to the boneless chicken wings, grab a breast, slice it up a little bit, put some breading on it, and throw it out there and try to sell it as a chicken wing. So, you know, when you see those, I can tell you, when you see the commercials and stuff for these big wing places, they're talking about their their boneless wings. You know, they're trying to cut back the cost of that chicken on those chicken wings. So just a little savings for them.
That makes sense.
Perfect.
Because they're not wings. Like you said, it's probably breast meat, and maybe some rib meat and whatnot. Like, that's a great little insight that we got there from Kim Bocamper.
I know they're not doing that at Delaware Chicken Farm. I know that.
Best chicken around, Kim.
Except Bocamper, right?
There you go.
Except Bocamper. How many wings could you throw back in your heyday?
You know what? My first year out of football, the first job I got, I was an operations manager for Easy Go Golf Carts. Or they had a branch down here. I used to sell golf carts, and we had a guy. We had a guy that was our parts manager, kind of big, burly guy with a beard, and kind of a tough talking guy. And there was a place up in Coral Springs that had all you could eat chicken wing night on Monday or Tuesday, whatever. And so he went there one night and came back and said he ate 50 chicken wings, and he's kind of spouting off to everybody. I said, "Hell, I could do that, and I could do that in no time. I could do that while I'm sleeping." So 2 weeks later, we went and had a little match. So I ended up eating, 85 chicken wings.
Oh my God!
But he slowed down at about 60, and so I started picking some off of his plate just to rub it in a little bit, you know. let me help you a little bit with your wings over here, since you're not going to beat me. So. Yeah, I think 84, 85 was my tops.
Holy moly, he outdoes you on there.
But I got to tell you this, I still had a couple laps to go if I had to.
Wow, unbelievable. Kim Bocamper, that's the kind of talk we need around here. We need the guys that are in the know when it comes to the chicken wings. Thanks for making time for us, Kim. We appreciate it.
All right, guys, anytime.
Kim Bocamper there. We'll talk to him plenty throughout the Dolphin season and preseason and whatnot. There is, speaking of the chicken wings, just going back to Monday for a second, when we come back, Joey Chestnut, the world champion eater, I'm going to tell you how many wings he threw back on Monday because Hooters was doing an all-you-can-eat wing promotion, so he sat down. Wait till you hear the story. I'll tell it to you when we come back. How many of you think Hooters was doing this all-you-can-eat wing thing, right? So yeah. Monday was National Chicken Wing Day. We just talked with Bocamper about it. And I just want, let me give you the specifics here. Joey Chestnut, he went to a Hooters at the Mall of Georgia. They describe him here in the CBSSports.com article as a 35-year-old competitive eating legend. He embarked on a 12-hour wing-eating marathon, taking advantage of the restaurant's $15.99 all-you-can-eat wing deal. So he sat there for 12 hours, Joey Chestnut, Hooters, $15.99, all-you-can-eat wings. How many wings did Joey Chestnut eat?
If I can eat 50, and Kim said he thinks he can sneak up on 100 in one sitting, he was there 12 hours, has to be 300.
He ate 413 wings.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. I mean, I don't care if it's spread out over 12 hours. To sit in a restaurant and devour 413 chicken wings?
That, you know what, you talk about something being so hot you can't enjoy it? On the 287th wing.
There's zero enjoyment. Zero.
You're just shoveling meat down your throat.
Zero enjoyment there.
And he wasn't getting paid. He paid.
No, I think it was a promotion because it says Hooters broadcast a live stream of Chestnut downing the wings for the first 6 hours. By 5:50 p.m., he was gifted a T-shirt for eating his 250th wing. Then came 6 more hours of nonstop munching, enough time to ensure his continued dominance of the eating scene.
At 280, there's a video on his Twitter account. At 280, he's fist pumping.
So he's not tired. He's enjoying it.
Oh,
still.
No, he's fist pumping.
Well, that's because he just got the T-shirt 30 wings ago. Oh. Everybody gets excited over a free T-shirt.
That's 413?
That's crazy. That is crazy.
And you know what it is? It has to be just competition with himself. Because nobody else around. At the hot dog thing, there's people next to him.
Right. He's just there, and he's just eating wings. Like, yeah, he's just throwing them back. Like,
that's his hobby.
He can just – he's got a gift. He's got a gift, right? I mean, that is gift. I'm not saying it's a good gift.
Tom Brady has a gift, but he doesn't want to do it in the mall on a random Saturday.
It's a good point. Although some basketball players like to get into a pickup game, right? You said you've got some former NFL guys that are in a flag football league.
Yes.
People want to use their gift.
Oh, gee.
Although Joey Chestnut's gift, admittedly, you have to eat in order to survive. You don't have to play football in order to survive. So, you know, he had to eat somewhere on Monday. Might as well be
413
wings.
That's what they got to put a time frame on it.
That
because
is
for him to sit there 12 hours, like, that's just.
But I wonder, like, if you went to Hooters on Monday and it was $15.99 all you could eat wings, like, how you're what, 35 years old now?
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not, it's not like you're burning 5,000 calories a day. Like,
no, his gut will tell you that.
So, what, like, how many do you think you could eat? All you could eat is $15.99. You paid, like.
But that's the thing. I can fly through 30. I can sit down and not stop. You've seen me eat 30 wings before. I can sit down and eat 30 wings.
And you
no
can
problem.
Also, you've got the gift of being able to sit in a restaurant or at a bar. You could do that all day.
Yes.
Right? Then, you like talking to people.
The rotation of people come through, and now I have new friends.
I get antsy. Like, I want to get out of there. You could do that all day long. In fact, my guess is you'll want to do that someday.
Oh, yeah.
You'll want to be the guy. I know Rick Shaw used to be a DJ on Magic 102.7. Rick Shaw, legendary DJ down in South Florida. Ricky Ticky. And he, when he was done working as a radio DJ, he would go to Quarterdeck.
In Davie.
Yes.
They have his picture up.
Yes. He had the little sailor's hat on that he would always wear. But from what I know, he would sit at that bar at Quarterdeck all day long. That was like, you know, some people, they'll go fishing all day long. Yeah. Some people spend their day on the golf course. Some people spend their day in the casino. Like, I'm talking about in retirement. Like, that's a fun day. He loved sitting at that bar and just shooting the bleep with people.
They said the thing, like, everybody knew you wouldn't beat Rick there and you wouldn't beat him leaving. He'd be the first person in the parking lot, and his car would be the last one there when it is. Right there, Dave. I used to, when I first got down here in 05, that was right down the street from my house. And I'd go 3 or 4 times a week because to talk to people. Like, hell, it's right down the street from Dolphin facility. People know me, you know, new Dolphin, you know, draftee. So I have a lot of folks to talk to. And I sat there with him and talked for hours. But he was there 6 hours before I got there, and I beat him out the door.
But you'd like that. Like, that would be like when you're done with radio, and like that would be going to the office. You get up in the morning, you go to the neighborhood bar, whatever it is. You could sit there all day long and have some appetizers, then maybe get a little lunch, and just all day, all night.
Let my wife tell me that her and the kids, because my wife and her friends that have kids, they go on that Disney cruise. They've gone on that Disney cruise twice. When they tell me they're leaving for a whole weekend, I start planning my bar attendance.
You'll just be there.
I'm going to hit Bo Campers on Saturday right at 12 when they open. I'll be there till about 6. Then I'll slide over to Ale House. Then I'll hit Quarterdeck. Then I just jump around from bar to bar talking to people.
People always say, oh, I saw Crowder out. I didn't want to bother him or whatever. You're no bother to him.
It's a mistake not to bother me. I'm waiting for conversation.
He loves it. He absolutely loves it. We got a couple of giveaways to do this afternoon. I'll tell you what, in the next segment, you want to give away the Luke Bryan tickets in the next segment, Solana?
Let's do it.
All right, so in the next segment, Luke Bryan, he is coming to Coral Sky Amphitheater in West Palm Beach this Saturday. You can still get tickets at livenation.com. If you want to win a pair of tickets, Luke Bryan's Sunset Repeat Tour with special guests Cole Swindell and John Langston. Again, Saturday, Coral Sky Amphitheater. You got to be listening in the next segment. Radio.com. Radio.com. Is this possible? Someone texted in. We were talking about wings. Someone texted in. There's a woman who ate 501 wings in 30 minutes. So I text them back. I go, that's impossible. Can't be done. Molly Schuler is her name. And so I Googled her. And there's video of it on YouTube. And it's from last year, 2018. 127-pound woman devours 501 wings in 30 minutes, setting world record.
I got it.
That doesn't seem possible. Was at the Wing Bowl in Philadelphia, which is, you know, a an event that they, you know, it's a wing eating contest. They sell out the wherever the Sixers play. They sell out like
Wells Fargo Center.
Is it the Wells Fargo Center? Yeah. 501 wings in 30 minutes? It doesn't, I mean, literally doesn't seem physically possible.
No, it does. That sounds crazy. I just, it's another one where she ate a 72-ounce steak in 15 minutes.
That, I understand that more than 501 wings, because if it took Joey Chestnut 12 hours to eat 400 wings, you're telling me she ate 501 wings in 30 minutes?
You could eat it like somebody with money. There's eating a wing, and then there's just pulling the skin off with your
right.
teeth. You know what I'm saying? You
right.
gotta, with the flap, you got to put your thumb through there and get that little middle meat out the flap up. Maybe she's just – maybe she's eating it like a rich
maybe.
Person.
Maybe.
But I don't think – honestly, I believe if she was – if she could do that, she would be with the Joey Chestnut. Like, her name would be that big.
It seems like reading her Google stuff and whatnot that she's in – I didn't even know that there was a competitor to Major League Eating. She's in a different league. I didn't realize that. I thought George Shea had the only competitive eating league.
Couldn't, because who left?
Kobayashi. But he does independent stuff. Like,
oh,
he won't sign with a wing. That's crazy. Because someone did, there was a tweet from, or no, it was a text from someone. He did the math on the amount of calories that Joey Chestnut would have ingested in those. It was like 29,000 calories.
Yeah, I looked it up. They said each wing is 80 calories. So if you do the math on 413, it's 33,000.
Man, that's crazy.
They have to go. You ask them all the time about the second phase of an eating contest. It has to be crazy. And you have to probably cleanse yourself, something to get all that grease and all that stuff
like,
out of your system. Can't be healthy.
Yeah, that's well, if she ate 501 wings in 30 minutes, God bless her. And God bless America. Here's a story from Dolphins Wire. I'll get to those Luke Bryan tickets. Don't let me forget, Alejandro. Here's a story from Dolphins Wire. I love the headline. Why new Dolphins coach Brian Flores is the antithesis of Adam Gase. Now, I did not know this, okay? Listen from the story. Do you remember which Dolphins game had you professing, I'm out on Adam Gase?
You do.
I know, right. For me, it was the Indianapolis game.
Yes.
Was that for you also, Solana?
It was.
Yeah, that was the one where I was like, what are we doing here?
You talked me into it.
Like, we're gonna upset Indianapolis in Indy, and we're going to run the ball on third. I mean, we're folding. We're folding.
Exactly.
You beat us. We don't want to beat you. You beat us.
I'm with you, though.
That was when I was out. Anyway, it says, do you recall the final straw? The moment you realized he is not, by any means, the next Don Shula, as Stephen Ross proclaimed with hope as the team introduced Gase for the first time. Maybe you never reached that defining moment with the former Dolphins head coach. There were many moments that embittered fans during the Gase era, but the defining moment for many was the December drubbing at the hands of the Minnesota Vikings. Believe it or not, it wasn't the 9 sacks Miami's offense allowed, the 418 yards the defense allowed, or even the 41-17 final score that sealed the deal. Instead, it was the pregame warm-ups. Now, I didn't know this story till I read it today on Dolphins Wire. Paul Allen, the Minnesota Vikings' renowned play-by-play caller, was so baffled by the Dolphins' warm-ups that he made a point to bring it up during his Monday morning radio show the next day. Allen referred to it as the most bizarre excuse of a warm-up he'd ever seen in 18-plus years of covering professional football. Lackadaisical and structureless. 15 minutes after they were allowed to begin their warm-ups, Dolphins players and coaches trickled out of the locker rooms at seemingly random rate, did some light stretching and ball tossing before calling themselves ready. The only thing that they were ready for was their spanking. Zero organization, zero intentionality, zero accountability. Enter Brian Flores. Flores has put an emphasis on organization. His practices have been lauded as the most structured in recent memory for the Dolphins. He's intentionally been running around to every unit and coaching group the entire time. Gase had a propensity to leave all position groups to their designated coaches and coordinators while attaching himself at the hip of the quarterbacks. Coach Flores believes in accountability and the necessity of doing the little things well, the things that Take No Talent, TNT. And as we learned, that accountability extends to coaches. We know that he got rid of the offensive line coach after just four practices. But I didn't know that about Adam Gase. Did you know that about the Minnesota practice?
First time I've heard that.
That's crazy. Now you were on an NFL team for 6-7 seasons. Like, I imagine the window that you get to actually be on the field working out and warming up, you take advantage of every second of that.
As a full team, yes. Because you only have, like you said, there's a window. Because he said there's 15 minutes. So there's a time you say you can be on the field as a team, and you have to be off the field to get ready, let us pull out the national anthem and all that stuff you want to do. You can go out as you can trickle out yourself 4 hours before the game and do some stretching, warm-ups, go out there with the trainers, let them stretch you out so you can get used to the weather, whatever. But it is crazy. That was after the miracle in Miami. You're still in the playoffs.
You're still in it.
So you beat New England last second of the game, and now you come back and you don't even want to – it seems like listening to you read it, it seems like they didn't even want to play in the Minnesota game. Let's get this game over with. You're still
crazy.
In the playoffs.
I mean, I'm reading that, right? I'm like, I'm scratching my head. I'm going, I didn't know about this, but that's shocking. That's crazy. Again, Paul Allen, the Minnesota Vikings play-by-play caller, 18 years in the league. Allen referred to it as the most bizarre excuse of a warm-up he'd ever seen in 18-plus years covering football. Lackadaisical and structureless. 15 minutes after they were allowed to begin their warm-ups, Dolphins players and coaches trickled out of the locker rooms at seemingly random rate, did some light stretching and ball tossing before calling themselves ready.
You know what? I did the same warm-up for so long, I remember exactly what we did. Came out as a team, you do the stretch where the offense looks at the defense looks at the offense, then you go to individual, then you do your plays on air, defense gets five, offense gets five, you punt the ball one time in the end zone, everybody meets in the end zone and slaps hands and yells and screams, takes y'all's ass back in the locker room to get ready for the game.
Like, it's a routine.
It's a routine that we did every single, and as coaches change, Saban left. And Cam came in. Cam did the same thing. Cam left. Ferrano came in. The same exact thing. For there to be no structure of the pregame, that's puzzling. You know what actually popped in my mind, too? What did Gase find out that week of practice? So, like, what changed? Because we would have heard if that was happening for three straight years. If he never had a pregame warm-up, right, we would have heard about that. For that game to be that glaring to Allen, for him to watch it and see, they don't even have a warm-up routine. Something had to have happened that week of practice. I don't know if we'll ever find out. But to hear that, something happened that week.
That is a crazy story, man. I see on the show sheet here, Solana has put together, you know what today is, Crowder? This might be a big deal for your dad.
What is that?
Today is National Avocado Day.
Oh, guacamole? I make some guacamole.
Do you think your dad knows it's National Avocado Day? Because that seems like something that might be celebrated where he is.
He doesn't need to know because he has guacamole in the refrigerator. It's actually DJ Marley, the 9-year-old DJ.
Yeah.
She made me talking about my dad on air into a mix.
Oh, really?
Twitter. I just retweeted it.
Oh, I want to hear that.
Yeah.
I want to hear Solana's movie trailer again, too. We'll do that at 5 o'clock hour. We'll do that in the 5 o'clock hour because that was – I didn't realize. Did you know when we played Solana's movie trailer, did you happen to look at the text machine?
No.
I didn't look at it till about 30 minutes after we played it. Did you look at the text machine, Solana?
I don't whenever we do something that I made.
I have to read some of these to you. And get down to where that was. That was about, what, 2 hours ago, I guess?
Yeah, just about.
All right. Because Solana, do you have the banger and not a banger sounds? Because he introduced us today. I didn't even know that he did this. But, you know, I like on Twitter to call things either a banger or not a banger. You know, 80s movies and songs, when it's their anniversary, I'll tell you via Twitter whether it's a banger or not a banger. Solana has come up with some audio for when I think something's a banger. And for when I believe something is not a banger.
Not a banger.
Oh. They're so bad. They are so bad.
The despair is not a banger. Gets
but,
me.
But he made a movie trailer. I'll play it for you in the next segment. But here are some of the texts that came in after we played the movie trailer a couple hours ago. LMAO, OMG. I be up late at night and I be drunk made me spit my food out. Holy bleep, that is hilarious. what the hell was that? Solana has been sniffing his sazon. Billy Corbin will be calling you, someone says. I mean, there's a good filmmaker right there. I am bleeping crying. I be drunk, LMAO. Funny as hell. How was that allowed? This show is terrible. Crying, I can't work. The trailer was awesome. Play it again. Damn, Hawk, I'm dying here. Solana is something else, man. Fire him now. The best part was Michael Irvin. Only on Netflix. Solana completely made up for yesterday's show there and then some.
Hey.
Please stop. I'm trying to practice safe driving. It goes on and on and on. Like, the majority is that people love him, Solana.
I'm not going to lie, I'm shocked.
Yeah, no, I think you may have created a banger.
How do you take time to create something and then you're scared to watch the response or listen to the response? That's what you do it for.
It's a banger, I think.
I think it's a banger, too.
It's a what?
A banger. Maybe I said that we can't change that. Can we maybe change that just a little bit so it sounds more like banger instead of woo? It sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher. And maybe we'll clean it up just a little bit. All right, I've got these Luke Bryan tickets. Caller 5 right now gets a pair of tickets to check out Luke Bryan's Sunset Repeat Tour with special guests Cole Swindell and John Langston this Saturday, Coral Sky Amphitheater. Tickets are still available at livenation.com. Now, we don't have the contest line anymore, so you got to call 305-567-0560. And I see Nicholas is calling in on line one because I see the caller ID. So you will be caller one, Nicola or Nicholas. I don't know if it just doesn't say the entire name. You'll be caller one, and then Solana will hang up on you, and then we'll take caller two, and we'll get to caller five. So caller five at 305-567-0560 gets a pair of tickets. Check out Luke Bryan's Sunset Repeat Tour this Saturday, Coral Sky Amphitheater in West Palm Beach. We've got a banger of a 5 o'clock hour for you next.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.